Welcome to the show, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And well, we've all heard about what's been going on with this minimum wage nonsense, right? The state of California, we're going to lead the nation with raising our minimum wage to $15 an hour. Absolutely insane. And it's you know, the first thing it is it's going to hit restaurants. None of us want to pay for, what is it, the $6 burger, but it doesn't cost $6. Well, get ready for the $6 burger to cost $12, because everywhere you go, and this is, you know, LA Times did an article on this, a week ago, talking about how the minimum wage is going to affect retail, and it's going to affect restaurants the most, because that's where you have people that start at a lower wage. And the margins, for example, the restaurant business, everybody thinks that the restaurant business has these people that in it make all this money. It's the margins are slim, about 4 to 6%, which is very little in a business. And so any kind of impact has to be passed along to the customer. I mean, nobody who starts a restaurant is going to take that kind of risk, right? We all know restaurants don't always succeed, right? Many of them fail. So the investors that go into these, you know, they give chefs and the people who make the concept of a new restaurant, they give them the money, aren't going to go into it if they don't get a return. So prices are going to go up. And that means, of course, that the people who are using their wages to buy groceries and buy goods and buy food when they go out are going to find that those goods are costing them more money, which gasp then leads to the question, are you really helping them, right? You can give somebody 15 bucks an hour and give them a raise, right, as a mandate. But then if every good that they go out and purchase costs more money, they're really not winning, are they? So one idea, of course, in restaurants would be to use, and I saw the minimum wage going up, and I thought, well, this is it. They're going to use robots. They're going to use automation. And there's talk about it. But here, in my hands, great story about China. There's a chain of restaurants that is using robots. Robots. And the verdict is in. These robots are getting fired. Yes. This restaurant, this is in the BBC. They're talking about these robot waiters. And apparently, so they're getting the boot. The article says, while the robot waiters were an excellent gimmick to get customers through the door, they were not quite so good at their program task of serving food and drink. Their mobility of the catering staff was great, but then as it turns out, they just don't get the job done quite right. It could be, if you go to another news story that came out the same day, producer Robbie found this, and I think it might explain why these robots have run into problems. Touching robots can arouse humans, study finds. Yes, that is correct. The Guardian is talking about a study apparently some researchers in California found that the intimate caress, I'm not making this up, the intimate caress of a humanoid robot can produce a physiological response in humans. It's true. So apparently they brought in all these volunteers and they had them line up and they brought in a robotic creature. Now here's the part that just baffles me. The robot that they brought in was less than 2 feet high and had eyes, ears, torso, legs, arms, and a voice. Okay, I'm not going to have a physiological reaction to a two foot high midget robot. I wonder what kind of volunteers they found. Well, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty dang sure. I don't care. I mean, it has eyes and ears, that's true, and a torso. Doesn't say what kind of a torso. So apparently, yeah, Well, it's the we'll post a picture up of this robot on samnation.com. But apparently there's the four females and six male volunteers all found that being touched by this robot created some form of arousal. The robots were politely touching them, I guess, in the less accessible regions of the body. Interesting. So, long story short, it reminds me there was a movie. Producer Robbie, this is right up his alley of this is his genre. What was that movie about the guy who's dating the robot? Nobody in the family wants to. He got the we'll touch on it. We got to find what this is about and get to it next segment. But there's a movie about this, came out a few years ago, and right on point. So. Yeah, well, does it have anything to do with Ted Cruz? No. But again, we will get to that in a minute. So now, hey, I am fresh back from Europe. Spent last week there taking care of some business. And a couple of observations of when you know that you're in Europe. When you're in Europe, healthcare is free. It's a right. Free healthcare. But you have to pay to go to the bathroom, which is really interesting. So, yeah, no, it's true. Everywhere in Europe, you pay to go to the bathroom. And it's usually quite a bit of money. You pay at least a buck or two to use the bathroom. So, you know, Obama's been telling us for 8 years that healthcare is a right. And telling us about how advanced Europe is, that they're ahead of the curve. And apparently they are. Everything's covered. Most European countries, everything is covered. And in fact, in some places, you can't even have private medicine. Did you know that? So you can't, there is no private system of medicine. And what it creates, practically speaking, is if you need any kind of procedure done, you have to bribe your doctor. It becomes an under-the-table, kind of a black market, if you will, in healthcare. And it's true. So if you want, because your doctor makes very little money, right? If he's a state employee, think about this, a state employee, and he's making the equivalent, like in the Czech Republic, these guys are making equivalent of $20,000-$30,000 a year. All right. And prices, mind you, prices are going up in this part of the world. It's not the bargain basement that it was back in the day. So these guys are making very little money, and the way they supplement their income is by taking cash bribes or donations in kind from patients who are cutting, you know, in line, trying to get, you know, the right healthcare. It's insane. But yes. Apparently, going to the bathroom in Europe is not a right. The other thing is interesting to me is that the one thing Europe has figured out is that slow traffic is obliged to move right. Are you frustrated by this as much as I am? You'd be driving in LA and you're in the fast lane and the person in front of you is cruising at 58 miles an hour. And all the lanes to the right are wide open, and there they are. They're parked in the fast lane, and who does that? So in Europe, it's actually you can get pulled over and will get ticketed if you are driving in the fast lane, which is called a passing lane. Yes, that is what it is, right? You know this, right? The fast lane is a passing lane. And when you finished passing the goofball in front of you, move over to the right. But you know what it is? It's these people that, you know what I mean? When people are just, they're self-righteous and they say, you know, I'm driving the speed limit. I'm driving the speed limit. Well, you know what Germany's answer to this is? No speed limits. You guys know this? Robbie's nodding. He's smiling ear to ear. So Germany, well, it's a misnomer. I'll tell you, the Autobahn, The Autobahn has, most of it is speed limited, but there are sections of it. And I drove from Munich to Prague, which is about, you know, 250-odd kilometers. So what's that, about 170 miles. And there are sections of those freeways in Germany that I was on that aren't speed limited. And so what it is, imagine you're driving along and you have a speed limit up, and then you'll get past that section of road and you'll have a sign with with the speed limit, and it's crossed out and it's grayed out, right? It's grayed out. And that's your signal that anything goes. And I think the only thing that's really devastating about it is that you're in a rental car, you know, and what I want, yeah. My car goes, should I even say this? It goes 210 miles an hour. I think it's the top speed. So I have a 200 mile an hour car at home sitting in the garage, perfectly good, ready to go, get me in some trouble in Germany. And instead I'm driving a diesel rental car. So by the time I got up to, you know, 150 miles an hour. And I did. I think I went about 160 at one point. Ugh. And it was fun. But by the time you get up to that top speed, there's some idiot passing in front of you going 80. And slowing down from 160 to 80 is no small feat. Let me tell you that. So, anyway, after this, speaking of slowing down, the Trump train. Wisconsin, let me explain to you what this all means. Let me explain to you. And we will be back after this. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right, the movie that I was thinking of was Lars and the Real Girl. And producer Robbie corrected me. It had nothing to do with robots. So it's Ryan Gosling, right? And he's got that in this whole movie. He's got the classic Ryan Gosling soulful look, you know, that all, you know, every girl, it just makes her all weak in the knees. Disgusting. Anyway, but he plays this kind of down on his luck guy living at home in some northern North Dakota kind of snowed-in state, probably Wisconsin, actually. He breaks up with his girlfriend, or he's just got some love tragedy in his life, and he orders online a human doll, and not a robot, correct, doll, and he names her and dresses her, and yeah, it's bizarre, but oddly a good movie, and he takes her everywhere, I think what makes the movie good is that everybody around him is trying to figure out how they're going to deal with this, right? They're figuring out how do they deal with their friend, their son, their grandson, and they end up embracing the girlfriend, right? Air quotes here. They embrace the girl and get her, you know, so the movie is about how that develops. There it is. And I think probably fairly easy to find. I have the DVD at home, that I know. So I think, it's almost like what the Republican establishment is trying to do with Trump. I mean, Trump is this sex doll that the Republican voters have decided to take home with them. And no, it's right. And everybody's kind of the party elders, the leaders, the men in the smoke-filled rooms are all putting their heads down and just. They're saying, you know what? Voters are going to realize they're going to realize their big mistake, that they've been had, that Trump is a charlatan, that he's a con man, that he's a sex doll. is that going to happen? Interesting. I don't think so. And we'll get into that in a minute. But talking about Wisconsin, let's go through it. So the conventional wisdom, which we here at Sam Nation do not follow. In fact, we know that you come here so that we can talk this through and deprogram you from a week of listening to the mainstream media and all their horse crap. So, some of the horse crap that we need to debunk here. The primary results came in on Tuesday. And more or less as expected, I think Cruz arguably did a lot better than was expected. Some of the polls that were leading up to the election had the gap closing between him and Donald Trump. There was one where it was as close as 4%. And it ended up being a far bigger victory for Cruz. Cruz receiving 45% of the vote and 48% of the vote, and Trump 35. So Cruz walked away from Wisconsin with 36 delegates and Trump only 6. And if you're like Robbie in the other room, you're wondering about Confetti Kasich. Confetti Kasich, right? Well, he's Confetti Kasich because, you know, he wins the first primary, like the 26th primary, and he decides he's having a giant party for himself and explodes confetti on himself to throw. Bizarre. Anyway, you've all seen the video. So Confetti Kasich, 14% of the vote, 0 delegates. And the conventional wisdom is that Cruz got a shot in the arm, that the Cruz campaign lives, and that Trump is mortally wounded. I mean, that's the narrative. Trump is mortally wounded. And the thing you've got to remember is the people that are saying this are people that want Trump to be mortally wounded. Okay? And Bernie won. Bernie won Wisconsin, and nobody's saying that Hillary is mortally wounded. They're not, interestingly enough. But the real issue here is, and let's go to the delegate math for a minute. When we last, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, went through the delegate math here for you, we try to get to the cold hard truth when it comes to these numbers. It's hard to come by. But we basically decided about 3 weeks ago, before Wisconsin and one other primary, that Trump needed about 60% of the remaining delegates, and that Cruz needed at that point about 80% of the remaining delegates in order to clinch the nomination, which is 1237, the magic number of Republican delegates needed to walk in to the convention in Ohio in July and own it. So that number, there's been an update. Trump now needs 63%. So his number of remaining delegates, meaning of all the remaining delegates, he needs to walk away with 63.4% of the remaining delegates. Now, you might think that that's really high, but let me tell you where Cruz is at. Cruz needs 96.8 of the remaining delegates percent. That's a lot. Let me tell you, that's unattainable. That anything short of Trump dropping dead, it's not going to happen. And even then, I'm telling you, Trump's voters are so loyal that if Trump dropped dead, he might still win half of the remaining delegates. Because you've got to look at how this breaks down. The people voting for Trump are voting for Trump. The people voting for Cruz are, in one part, voting for Cruz, and in another part, are voting against Trump. there's a stop Trump vote inside the Cruz vote. It's like a little Russian nesting doll. It's a Russian nesting doll of primary voters. Kasich is a clown. He's in this purely for his own ego. He has no viable path. I know. Robbie, don't worry. I'm going to say this. I know you did the math for me. We pored over the numbers, so I'm going to say it here just so, yes, for your moment in the sun. Kasich needs 144% of the remaining delegates to win. He's the bad student who needs to do some extra credit in order to pass the course. And he needs about 50% extra credit, which, well, let me tell you, one slacker student, you know, I can tell you, even that's impossible. So Kasich is in this this is some vainglorious ride into the sunset for him. And while, you know, he makes a fine congressman and a fine kind of backroom Republican strategist, this is just insanity. Well, he was also governor, but he was active in the national Republican establishment in the steering committee as a congressman, and that's probably where he made a majority of his contacts. So Kasich is just pursuing this for his own personal advancement, and then there's the quote earlier in the week where Kasich says, "Well, we're going toward a contested convention, and it's going to be fun." What does that mean? It's going to be fun. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. So basically what it's coming down to, I'll say this, is that Trump still conceivably could get 63% of the remaining delegates. That is not an impossible achievement. When you look how he's polling in New York, in California, I mean, he's ahead significantly. In New York, he's got 51-52% of the vote sewn up, if you believe the polls. And no, I mean, Cruz is lagging double digits. There's no hope. Well, it means he's going to take home all the delegates. That's what it's going to come down to, right? So he takes all the delegates, which now, if you understand the principles of how the math works, whenever you take home 90% of the delegates, 100% of the delegates, and in these modified winner-take-all states, when you get 50% of the delegates, you take home all of the delegates. There's zero apportionment. So as soon as you begin, it's like going to class, it's going to school. You remember when you get 100% on your homework assignment, that really raises your grade up from a C, doesn't it? It helps. And it's the same thing here. You start cleaning up at 50% and you start taking home all the delegates. This 63% starts going down, down, down. And this is really important. But again, you would never know this if you were listening to, you know, well, MSNBC and even Fox News and certainly CNN, where every talking head has lauded this Wisconsin victory as the greatest thing, as a resurgence, right? What have you heard? A resurgence of Cruz. The Phoenix has risen. And I'm telling you, it's not happening. It's not happening. So I'm going to tell you here after the break what the Republican establishment plan is, what their game plan is. It's kind of fun, to quote Kasich. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Well, we standing by your man. well, I've I tell you, I have some credibility on this Trump issue. I feel like I do. I feel like I've earned it. I've said it before on the program, and I'll say it again. Those of you who have been following me for a while now will know that I've always said that this is a phenomena. The Trump phenomena is not going away. And at every turn, highly qualified, highly lauded, well-paid people on TV and on the radio have predicted Trump's demise at every turn. And at every turn, they've been wrong. So why would you believe them now? Yeah, because, you know, there's a little less than 400 delegates remaining to be had, or somewhere around 400 delegates. And in New York, which will be on April 19th, a week and a half from now, the New York primary, there are, and guess how many delegates there are? There are 95. So about a quarter of the remaining delegates are up for grabs in New York. And about that same amount in California. Now, let's say Trump gets both those states 50% or more. He takes them all home. And so if we do just again, it's basic math. If he takes both those states, and I doubt in these socially, even though it's a primary, we got California, you know this, California is an open primary state. You're going to have not just Republicans voting in it. And Trump draws the crowd from the other side. He does, which explains why you have in states like Pennsylvania, widespread voter, Democratic voter defections, and you have hundreds of thousands of voters lining up to re-register as Republicans. Those are not people voting for Kasich. Those were Trump voters. So those voters are going to carry in states like New York and states like California or may very well tip the scales. Now, roughly rounding it, if there are about 200, if of the next 400 delegates to be had, Trump collects 50% of those, that 63% number goes down significantly. Then he only has to clean up, probably my guess would be off the top of my head, somewhere around 45-50% of the remaining delegates to comfortably cruise into the convention with 1237. So yes, is this really exciting? Yes. Does it give us lots to talk about? Yes. Is it over? No. Now, betting odds, if you believe betting odds have anything to do with anything, and I think they do, odds are strongly predicting a brokered or contested convention. And that's something to, there it is. The people who are putting money on this are saying that Trump is going to show up with less than the magic number, the 1,237 delegates. Now, what does the party make of all of this? Let's talk about the Republican Party for a minute. We are a two-party system. Like it or hate it, we are a two-party system. And I always say it's not the world's worst thing. I don't lament it the way some people do. And the reason is that I see the difference in countries where they have a multi-party system. And, let's say you go to a country like Germany. I mean, Germany has something like 17 different political parties. And they have a party for everybody's, flavor of the month political cause. And what does it do? It means that the issues that we solve in our primaries, because we have look at all the differences within the Democratic Party. You've got voters that want Bernie, you've got voters that want Hillary, they have voters that want Trump. And then on the Republican side, you've got social conservatives, right? You have folks that are very, very religious and vote based on, socially conservative issues, abortion, other litmus test issues that they have as a threshold of voting for a candidate. And then you have voters that care just about the economy or care mostly about the military. You've got libertarians. You've got religious conservatives. Yeah, it's a big tent party. And again, same on the Democratic side, where you've got people like Bernie Sanders who basically would like to nationalize every industry and throw every CEO in jail. In Europe, all these little factions each have their own party, and so they elect their own candidates to the parliament. And then in parliament, no one party has a majority usually. So so in order to govern, they form coalitions. They form these partnerships with one another, and they sometimes have very strange bedfellows. I mean, you have conservative parties who team up with the Green Party, for example. And then what happens is, and this is really important. This is the takeaway. If you didn't know this, it's an interesting thing. Then what you have is you have this governing coalition that can dissolve at any point in time. The coalition, the leader of that coalition, usually the leader of the dominant party of that coalition, becomes the prime minister. And the prime minister then leads the president here in the U.S. would lead the executive branch, leads the legislative branches of government in a way. But that leader then can be, that leader then is dictated to by these minority parties that are in government. So you have a little party like the Green Party, and they'll say, well, we have this one issue, and you've got to follow us on this one issue, or what? We're going to back out of the deal. We're going to bail on you. And what is that? What happens? Dissolves parliament. The prime minister's position is basically eliminated, and the government is thrown into chaos. And that, let me tell you, that's bad, right? I know if you don't like Obama, you want him out of office tomorrow, but there's something really good about our system where we have this stability. We have stability because we have our leaders in office for a period of time, and then you have set elections that determine when our leaders, whether they're in Congress, whether they're in the White House, get booted or reelected. And all of this horse trading, all of this, I've got this issue and that issue, all of this gets sorted out in the primaries. We sort it out before we start to govern, not after. And so these parties, though, this is the drawback. These political parties have an enormous amount of power, don't they? Because they have the final say on who the candidate is. This is the issue, we haven't had one of these in a long time. We haven't had a race that has been cut this close in a long time, not in my lifetime, at least. And so you have this race that's all tied up, and the Republican Party is starting to make noise about how this is all going to go down. And Rance Priebus, if you can't pronounce that name, don't worry, you are not alone. He is the chairman of the Republican National Committee, a.k.a. the Republican Party. And Rance Priebus, people jokingly call him Prince Rebus because of his authoritarian style. But he's a young guy, kind of diminutive, actually, doesn't come across as particularly obnoxious. But he is in charge, and I promise you one thing. Him and his fellow committee members, Republican National Committee members, do not like Trump because Trump owes them nothing. Trump is a self-created phenomena. For better or for worse, he got to where he is now in the race, which is still in the lead, no thanks to the Republican Party establishment. And what does the Republican Party establishment want? Well, they want, if they've got a president in the White House, they want to be able to do this. Hello, Mr. President. Mr. President, We would like a meeting. We want to tell you what your priorities ought to be for next year. And they want the president to say, well, of course, Rance, come on in. Come to the White House. Let's talk about this because, you know, I owe this whole thing to you. That's what they want. Of course. That's why the Democrats want Hillary to be elected. And it's why the Republicans' wet dream is that somehow Confetti Kasich gets into the White House, their good old boy, that's going to do what they tell them to do. And the American voters are sitting here going, well, you know what? Screw you. We're either going for this Trump guy or we're going for Cruz, who really is not anything close to an establishment candidate. And the fact that they're coalescing behind him really only goes to show how deeply they don't like Trump. But Prince Rebus has said, by the way, this is a quote, this is a nomination for the Republican Party. If you don't like the party, then sit down. The party is choosing a nominee. So this really is not about what we want, you and I. This is not about our votes, because when we don't vote the way they want, what happens? They get their way. And that part of it here is what is infuriating voters all over America. And this convention, if this is how it goes down, unprecedented things are going to happen. Back after this, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Hey, have you bought a coloring book? Robbie, do you color? Yeah, well, maybe you are. Maybe you're just the right age. I have a stack always here in the studio of crap. No one would ever believe if it's the I don't even believe this. You won't believe this stack. But you know that I would not lead you astray. So these sources are all verified and re-verified before we go on the air. And this is it. Yeah, so I'll answer my own question. Can I start there? Yes, I have bought a coloring book for my children. Imagine my surprise. I say that, but you'll see where I'm going with this. Imagine my surprise when I saw this article about how adult coloring book craze has prompted a global pencil shortage. Franz is laughing. Franz, oh boy. we're going to talk after this, Franz. So Franz apparently enjoys to color. Before I get into this, let me tell you first, I don't even really like my kids coloring because I think it discourages the creative process of drawing. I'd much rather, I personally, what we do is we buy our kids, notepads and blank notebooks, and we let them draw. I think that drawing is, anyway, but that's just what I do for my kids. Apparently, this craze of adult coloring books. And don't worry if you're imagining that these are coloring books of an adult thematic nature. Fear not, these are just coloring books for adults. And what do they have? Intricate black and white patterns, swirls. They are art in and of themselves. And, well, Right. And I'm looking at it. We're going to put this also up on the on SamNation.com. You have ripple effects, you know, just you have little, you know, intricate designs. These are very intricate designs. These are not your kids' coloring books. Apparently, in 2014, only 1 million, and that's a lot, only 1 million of these adult coloring books were sold. And in 2015, it jumped up. Can you guess by how much it jumped up just from 2014 to last year? It jumped. Franz, are you going to... Franz, you might believe this. It jumped to 12 million books sold. The two top books, the two top-selling books on Amazon are both adult coloring books. And these people vote. Mind blown. So, why are people doing this? There's this opinion that, you know, we're so iPhone, Android phone, tablet, iPad, computer. We're so inundated with the technology, with screens everywhere, that there's something oddly, well, relaxing about coloring. But then again, if you're a millennial, maybe it's not. One reviewer on Amazon, and this just, well, I already got this out of my system. I laughed about it when I read it, but maybe you will laugh. A reviewer wrote down that most of the pages, this is about an adult coloring book that he's reviewing, most of the pages are full of pictures that are so small, I can hardly see the details to color them, which causes more stress than if I hadn't tried to color in the first place. Yeah, this is the guy that we're going to be paying a $15 minimum wage to serve food. He's so stressed out, he can't even color a book. God help us. This is America, the country that fought two world wars and won, that saved Western civilization in the 20th century, that has been at the front, at the head of the spear of every innovation, in the last 200 years that has led the world. And we are too stressed out to color. God help us. You can't even make this up. So there's so many people are coloring that the folks that are making, like one company, Faber-Castell in Germany, they're struggling to make enough pencils. And I know this because I have kids. These Faber-Castell pencils that they're talking about, they're expensive. These are, I'm talking for, you know, 10 measly pencils. This is $35. Tell me, yeah, right? Tell me who's spending, all these people spending $35 on 10 pencils. And they're running out. Unbelievable. So, I totally love this. These are the people that are deciding the future of this race. These are the people that are voting. I wonder if they're using these colored pencils to fill out their votes. You know, you go to vote and you have to. Well, I don't go and vote. I do the whole ballot in the mail thing because. Because that's just the better way of doing it, let me tell you. It really is. But I will tell you, that is when my superb coloring skills come into play, because you know you've got to fill in the little bubble. And the directions say very clearly to use a blue or black ink and to color in between the lines. But I do it in pen because, you know, I don't trust anybody. And I'm pretty sure that if I did it in pencil, there'd be some Democratic Party operative that would be changing my vote. Fairly confident of that. So, yes, the Republicans want to, they want to direct where this race is going to go. They want to direct it. And I'll tell you, I will tell you exactly how they plan to do it. It's all about the rules, right? I know this. So this is why, and I'll tell you, this is why so many lawmakers are lawyers. I can say this as a lawyer. I'm a lawyer, and I know that the outcome of a game depends on the rules of the game. You watch a game of basketball. It's all about the rules. Certain points count, and certain points don't. If you go and shoot a basket after the buzzer, it's not going to count. If you shoot it right before, it will. And those are rules that are set. Now imagine that you start a game. You start a game, a sporting event, and you start to change the rules, I don't know, second quarter? And that is what we're talking about here. These rules, the all-powerful rules committee decides the rules of who and how these votes are tabulated and which of the delegates can even go and vote during the convention. And the way this works is based on how many delegates you get, right? So Trump has how many delegates right now? 757. He selects people to be, he selects those delegates. And he decides who those delegates are going to be. And there hopefully are people that are going to be loyal to him. That's what every candidate wants. They want people who are diehard Trumpsters. They're going there. Same with Cruz. He has 504 delegates. He wants every one of those people to be diehard Ted Cruz supporters. But the rules, apparently, first things first, is that in the first round of voting, these delegates are obligated to vote for their candidate. And in this, and if you don't reach 1237, if you don't get the majority, then in the second round of voting, these candidates are not bound, are not obligated to vote for the delegate that sent them there. And all these little rules, we talked about that rule 12B, whatever it was, where, you know, where this was a rule last convention that was specifically tweaked to silence Ron Paul and to prevent his delegates from even getting to vote in the first round. Now, yes, it's easier to do to a small minority candidate, but trust me, the Republican Party right now is scheming of ways to steal this, to make it so that Trump, if it goes to the second round, his delegates are either obligated or enticed to go elsewhere. And there are ways that they can do that. And it simply comes down to the rules of engagement on the floor. Now, I've told you, I'm going to be there. I'm going to the convention. I'm going with a couple friends, and we will be there as observers. And so we will do our show that week. I will be able to tell you everything because I will have been there and seen it. And nothing is getting by me. I promise you that. Confetti Kasich was right. This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. So, be sure, if you haven't already, check us out on Instagram. Sam Nation. @ Sam Nation. Twitter @ Sam Nation Show. And download, folks, and download our podcast on the website. It's all very clear there. It's all working smoothly. Download the podcast. If you can't catch our show, please, please download the podcast. Let's have some fun with this. And visit, please, samnation.com. This is Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC.